Sairam, dear listeners, a warm and hearty welcome to afternoon satsang. This is a very, very special month and we are closing in on a very, very special day, the Mahashivaratri. For those who are unaware, every month of the calendar has a Shivaratri. But the Mahashivaratri comes only once every year. And it is considered to be very, very special, very sacred, holy, powerful, vibrant, whatnot. Even our dear Swami has emphasized a lot on the Mahashivaratri. You know, in fact, Prem, before I dive deep into this, you know, welcome dear listeners for this afternoon satsang. As always, we begin this in Swami's omnipresence, offering our most humble pranams at His lotus feet. Sairam Prem, you know, talking about Shivaratri, I just could not control the flow. So, here I am stopping it to greet you. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind and Sairam to all listeners. And yes, indeed, it's a beautiful eve of Shivaratri.
Yes, and as I said, I was in the flow. Right. So, you know, it reminds me of one story that I heard. And this story is presented in many variants and versions. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful. Basically, it shows the power and significance of Shivaratri. The story goes that here was this hunter who was chasing a deer. And throughout the evening, the deer gives him a slip. Finally, it's somewhere dusk time, early parts of the night. And he comes to know that the deer might be in one thicket. He goes there, climbs up a tree in order to get a better sight of the deer. And he's not able to see the deer. And as he's sitting watching there, he suddenly sees a group of people coming towards the tree. He's wondering what's happening. So he sits on the tree, observes them. They seem to do some rituals at the base of the tree. And as they are doing their rituals, he hears chants. And these chants, he deciphers them as Vashi. Mm-hmm. Actually, it is Shiva, Shiva, Shiva going, but he hears it in an order which makes it sound like Vashi, Va, Shiva, Shiva, Shi. So he hears it as Vashi.
Okay.
And he wonders what is it, but he's intrigued because it's a huge gathering of people who are chanting this. And once he sees them chanting, he gives up all hopes of, you know, getting his deer. Because if the sounds and the drums is sure that, he's sure that it would have scared the deer off. And he is not sure what these people are up to, so he decides to continue sitting on the tree.
Okay.
The story goes that in order to pass time, not knowing what to do, he also gets into that chanting mode and he just starts saying Vashi, Vashi, Vashi.
Mm-hmm.
Unknown to him, the Vashi, Vashi, Vashi becomes Shiva, Shiva, Shiva. And again to pass time, he is just plucking leaves and throwing them down. The story's culmination is that unknown to him, he was on a Bilwa tree, which is held with great reverence because it is very dear to Lord Shiva, the Bilwa, the trifoliate leaved tree. And on the Bilwa tree, he's plucking these Bilwa leaves and throwing them down where a Shivalinga is located. In fact, he had thought that it was a stone and he had used it to climb the tree also. So onto the Shivalinga, he's putting these Bilwa leaves saying Vashi Vashi, which is getting converted into Shiva Shiva. And the story goes that this hunter gets liberation from the cycle of life and death, because of this act of his, because it happened to be the Mahashivaratri night that night. So, you know, this is a story definitely, but the idea behind this story is to state to the world how significant and how profound is this celebration of Mahashivaratri. And Swami has given, of course, we have heard it in Swami's discourses, the significance of Mahashivaratri.
Right. Of course, before we go to that, another version of the same story, as you said, there's so many versions to it, is that there is a hunter who is being chased by a bear and he climbs the tree and that eventful thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Where he knows that if he sleeps, he will fall off the branch.
Okay.
So to keep himself awake, he plucks leaves and, you know, as a thing, he just throws to the lingam. That's one thing which happens. And of course, but, you know, going to the significance of that, a kind of an established fact, you know, is that the human mind has a correlation to the moon or the phases of the moon. In fact, this has even been established by psychologists because they see those who are you know, having a certain ailment of the mind seem to be more aggressive during days when there's a full moon.
If I can interrupt you here, what you say is very right, because, you know, in fact, the term lunatic has been derived from the word lunar, which is moon, which means that a person's emotions and state change according to the phases of the moon. That is one thing. And there are so many legends. For example, the legend of the werewolf. You know, it's all connected with the full moon.
Right.
And in fact, if you go to the sun signs, you know, the famous book is there by Linda Goodman, the sun signs, astrological sun signs. I know this because I happen to be the sun sign with the ruling planet being moon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is Cancer, the crab. So in that it says that since moon is the ruling deity here, during full moon time, you will find a Cancerian extra emotional, extra sensitive. So either the smallest thing will make him very happy or the smallest thing will make him very sad. So it's not just out of the blue that we say that psychologists have a connection between the mind and the moon. There are so many different ways of verifying the same thing.
Right. And so, listeners, that's good news that we are having the rational side of Arvind today. So we should be useful for our discourse because we are closer to the waning half of the moon and we are closer to the new moon. Coming back to the significance of the moon and the phases of the moon and Shivratri, as I understood, you know, the moon wanes off, it takes 15 days, right? 15 and on the
14 days. On the 15th,
on the 15th day, there is a no moon day. Or, you know, a dark new moon day.
Huh.
And then there's a new moon day. And then you have, after 15 days, the full moon day. So it is believed that, you know, in the waning phase of the moon, the 14th day every month is celebrated as the Masa Shivratri. It is the
Masa Shivratri, meaning the monthly Shivratri.
The monthly Shivratri. And the idea is that as the phases of the moon wane, the influence of the mind on our intellect reduces.
Hmm.
In fact, Swami says the mind is made of four components: Manas, Buddhi, Chitta, and Ahankara.
Manobuddhi chitta ahankara.
Right. Manas is actually the wavering aspect of the mind. And buddhi is the one which makes the discriminating, which is given the discriminating power, which makes the right choices. And chitta, of course, is that which stores memories. So all your habits, all your vasanas, all your, you know, attributes, and your nature, your upbringing, everything is in the chitta.
The storage, huh?
So what spirituality or any spiritual discipline is meant to do is to empower the buddhi aspect of the mind. So it is believed that as the moon is waning, and when the moon is in the thinnest phase, okay, there, I mean, technically speaking, you should celebrate Shivratri when there is no moon. But you celebrate it when there is that slightest aspect of the moon, because you need the buddhi. You need that aspect of the mind, because Swami says, Manayeva Panishanam Karanam Bandha Mokshayo.
You need the mind to help you turn you Godward.
Right. So when there is that slight influence of the mind, that is when your buddhi is maximum empowered, where the wavering nature of the mind cannot influence you as much. So that is when Swami says you have to put in as much of spiritual endeavor as possible. And as I said, there is a Masa Shivratri, but this particular Shivratri which comes in this month, it is called the Mahashivratri. Among all the monthly Shivratri, this is the most sacred and most special. So Swami says, if you can spend this night when the moon is having the least, or the mind is having least influence on you, then you can get maximum spiritual benefit. So that is the essence of celebrating a night vigil. And that is why that hunter who sat on the tree by, you know, accidentally staying awake the whole night and doing Bilvarchana to Shivalinga could attain that state of, you know, release from birth and death.
Whenever Swami speaks about this aspect of Shivratri, he always, you know, quotes from the Vedas, which says, you know, Chandra Mamanaso Jataha. Part which says that moon and mind are interlinked.
The mind has come from the moon, in fact. That's what it says.
It's derived from the moon, that's what it says. So dear listeners, what Prem and me thought was that this is the time when Swami says you must draw in all your five senses, just like the tortoise draws in its four legs and, you know, it withdraws inside the shell. And he says that this is the best time to do it because the influence of the mind on the buddhi is the least, is the weakest. So at this time, if we have proper sense control, if we control our senses and direct all our energies towards God, we can very easily attain God, just like that hunter who did so, like that story says. And That is one of the most important aspects of Shivratri. Because, you know, Lord Shiva is depicted as the greatest ascetic. The greatest person who had absolute control over all the senses. And that is why that, you know, it goes off into the Kama Dahana story where he burns down desire, which is symbolic of Shiva, burning down desire. So Lord Shiva is the greatest ascetic who has complete sense control. And so therefore, one of the important messages from Shivratri is that we exercise control on our senses. And we have 5 senses. And what we felt was, I'm sure many of you also will agree, that among the 5 senses, one of the most difficult to control is the sense organ called the tongue.
In fact, we don't have to agree. Swami himself has told that the control of senses should start from the tongue. In fact, Swami gives a beautiful analogy. Hmm. He says, if you want to control your horse and make it carry your chariot forward, you'll have to tie it in the mouth.
And if we just see practically, every other sense organ has one function.
Right.
You know, the skin feels, the eyes see, the ears hear, the nose smells. It's only the tongue that has a dual role. One is it speaks, it has an output role, and it eats, it has an input role. So it's like an all rounder among the sense organs. And so even from a practical viewpoint, it makes sense that we control the tongue.
Right. And coming back to the Shivratri thing, if you want to make a spiritual resolve, if you want to make a resolve which is going to help you spiritually, this is perfectly the time. And that's exactly what we're going to discuss about today, because one aspect which is very, very dear to Swami, which Swami has very, very categorically said that this is what he expects out of those people who call themselves devotees or who wish to embark on the spiritual path.
Exactly. You know, out of the 2 aspects of the tongue we spoke about, one is the output, one is the input aspect. This satsang we shall concentrate on the input aspect, which is eating. Eating, because that is so important, and Swami has been very categorical in what he has said about eating. We also received a few feedback mails from a few of our listeners wherein they requested whether this topic could be taken up. And when we read the mail, we were very touched, because it was indeed intriguing to see those questions. And that is what inspired us to delve deep into this aspect, draw out pearls of what Swami has discoursed on, and hopefully present this in this satsang,
and
which may possibly roll over to the next week.
Surprisingly, we have spoken for so long without even mentioning one word of the topic.
Uh-huh.
And the topic is vegetarianism. Because oftentimes we have heard Swami saying that this is what he wants his devotees to do. Swami wants devotees to embrace vegetarianism. And in fact, Arvind and Paisal just went around the studio asking how people gave up non-vegetarian eating habits and became vegetarians. And most of them had the shortest story to narrate, because they said, we just came to Swami, we left it. Because there has never been a sound reasoning behind why they chose to become vegetarians. They just chose because that is what Swami expects and that is what Swami likes.
So what happens now is, if we want to see on the subject of vegetarianism and non-vegetarianism, what has Swami got to say? I think that's it. There's no more clear directive than that Swami is perfectly on vegetarianism, and there's no further debate, there's nothing else to talk about. But what we thought is, we would use this time in order to explore on the possible reasons. It's not comprehensive. At the same time, it's not that these are the reasons. But now that we know that Swami is for vegetarianism strictly, why could the Lord possibly have said like this? This is a very partly foolish, a partly brave venture. But with Swami, any venture becomes an adventure. And since we are taking it up with love in our heart, humility in ourselves, and as an offering at Swami's lotus feet, we are sure that He will guide the flow of this discussion.
And this is also because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of parents, you know, who might be raising children into believing in Swami, into having love for Swami, and also the habits which Swami likes. So it is very difficult to give them a good habit with the argument that this is what Swami likes.
Mm.
Because you're trying to inculcate both love for Swami and, you know, good habits in them. So you would have to give them a mix of rational explanations with what Swami expects. of them. So maybe this will also be useful for parents who would like to argue their children into right habits and habits which Swami likes. Because again, it comes to, you can have devotion to Swami if you're sattvic. You can be sattvic if you eat food which is sattvic. So it becomes like a cycle. Okay, you become a devotee and then eat sattvic food, or you become a person who eats sattvically and then go towards noble thoughts.
And at the same time, you know, they say that, not they say that, we have seen that any word that Swami says is so full of meaning.
Right.
Sometimes the meaning strikes us 10 years later. Something that Swami told in the interview room, one word. You know, I personally have had an experience where Swami told something in an interview room in a dream, not in reality. And months later, I find its meaning. So it's not as if what Swami says, every word is true. Every word that he says in a dream, too, are true. So that we have learned with experience. Now, as you said, for a child who has not yet experienced, who is seeking this experience, it may seem very, very one-sided that just because Swami has said, we do it. I mean, because in our schools, we are taught to question everything, which is a very good habit. In fact, Swami also, you know, says, come, see for yourselves, experience, and then have faith. He never says, have faith and then come to me. That is how Swami has been from the beginning, and Swami has always encouraged the scientific inquiry, because Swami says, if you do something honestly, truthfully, true to yourself, and sincerely, everyone will be led to the same truth, because truth is only one. That has been Swami's saying always. So therefore, if we research into Swami's words, we will get so many more insights. That's what Swami says. Education must be skilled. Then it will lead to balance, which will give rise to insights. So that is what has happened in this also. Swami has given us the knowledge. Swami has told that we should be strictly vegetarian. Now, if this knowledge, we skill it and in a balanced way look at it, we get so many insights, and that is what has happened here. That we have come across so many such insights, which we could state as possible reasons on why one should be vegetarian.
Right, but before going to that, maybe we will just play a clip of Swami, where if anybody has any doubt
whether Swami has said,
whether Swami is in the side of vegetarianism so completely, then we should play this clip for you, because during the 69th birthday, the clip which we're going to play is the discourse which Swami gave then. Swami emphatically says what he expects of Swami's devotees. So maybe that's a good clip to start with the discussion with.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులార
ఎంబోడిమెంట్
ఈనాడు స్వామి యొక్క 69వ బర్త్డే అని మీరు భావిస్తున్నారు.
యు వ్యూ దిస్ డే యాస్ ది 69th బర్త్డే ఆఫ్ భగవాన్.
ఆ విధమైనటువంటి ఆశలు లేవు.
స్వామి హాస్ నో
హ్యాపీ బర్త్డే అని అనేక మంది వస్తుంటే చెప్పారు.
మెనీ సే హ్యాపీ బర్త్డే.
నాకు ఎప్పుడు కూడా నువ్వు హ్యాపీగానే ఉన్నాను, నాకు ఎందుకు హ్యాపీ బర్త్డే చెప్తావు?
భగవాన్ ఈజ్ ఆల్వేస్ హ్యాపీ, దెన్ వై షుడ్ యు సే
హ్యాపీగా ఉండండి.
యు బీ హ్యాపీ.
హ్యాపీ నేను హ్యాపీ.
Your happiness is Bhagavan.
This
is the main thing.
Eenadu Swami ki oka vidhamaitundi kanukuga meeru bhavinchi ee maamsa vachana madhyapanamu ee smoking moodu kulunu Swami ki arpitam cheyandi.
Therefore you should sacrifice non vegetarianism, drinking and smoking today.
Intini meeru arpitam cheyata valla meeru baagapadtaru, samajam baagapadutundi, desham kuda baagapadutundi.
Then once you sacrifice, the society will progress, you will be better.
Kutumbamu, samajamu, desamu baagupadatame Swami yokka lakshyam.
The main aim of Bhagavan is the prosperity.
Swami yokka lakshyanni meeru anusarinchedattuga untunte, anusarinchalani vishwasam untunte, mottamodati ee mooditini tejinchali ide chanamulo.
If you have full faith in Bhagavan's teachings, follow these three.
Edo repu 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 ani anukovakuddu.
Don't postpone saying tomorrow.
Endukanaga?
Why?
Idi next anukuntunte adi poorthi test ga maaripothundi.
If you go on saying next, it becomes a test.
Taste ga maaripothundi.
Then it becomes taste.
Voddu.
No.
Ippude ee nimishamlam dekudanu aa sankalpanni meeru drudham chesukovali.
Right now itself, determine.
Idi ee naadu mee nunchi nenu aashinchetunte yokka aasha.
This is expected by Bhagavan today from us.
So that's the discourse clip where Swami is saying, right now, just now, give it up.
You know, speaking about Swami talking on giving up non-veg food, you know, I'm reminded of an incident.
Mm-hmm.
This was actually recorded by Miss Jeru Captain in radio. So I think it's in 2004 issue of Heart to Heart. It's there on the website. But a very, very interesting incident. You know, she writes that her daughter saw once, you know, on the television, there was a program on the cruelty that animals are subjected to before they are converted into meat that we eat. So seeing that, she was so moved and she felt so disgusted, she felt so nauseated, that she decided that she would not have meat anymore. And she came home and, I mean, she was at home watching the program, she told her mom, her mother, that is, this is Miss Jeru Captain who has written the article, she told her that, mother, I want to give up, I don't want to touch meat anymore. Not only did she give up, her nausea and her, you know, sense of feeling so bad for the animals was so intense that she went on to even convince her little brother.
Okay.
She kept talking to her little brother and ensured that he grew into a boy who would abhor meat, who would not touch it. And so here was a family where the children are pure vegetarians, but the mother, she is unable to give it up. You know, she says that for the last 40 years she has been having meat regularly. So it's so tough for her to give it up. And one day when she was cutting a chicken, she says, the son, her little son comes up to her and says, mother, if somebody were to take away me or my sister and cut them like this, how will you feel? Like that only there is some other mother who is feeling like this for this chicken, you know. And she said that it was like a rude shock for me, because till now chicken was considered as a high-priced, high-protein food. That's all, nothing more than that. She had never been able to look at it as another life form, having its own mother, its own child and all that, you know. So she was very taken aback. But still, she, you know, she did not know what. But this was a time when she started getting really pulled, because till now it was just a kind of a practical decision. And here were now the emotional strings coming, where her own children were questioning her and she did not know what to do. The other side of it was she found it so hard to give it up, you know, because apparently even meat eating, like cigarette smoking or alcohol drinking, that's what, those are the three things that Swami outrightly condemned so strongly and requested the devotees to give that up instantly. So meat eating too is addictive apparently. And so having 40 years of eaten meat, she found it so hard to give up. Then she says that she went down for a walk in the garden, and in the garden was a pond with some fishes in it. And you know, we always test Swami with questions. Swami, if this is what you want, let this happen, or something like that. So at that point in time, you know, I forgot to mention that they already were devotees of Swami. They were Swami's devotees. In fact,
okay,
she records that, she writes in the article that whenever the Sanatan Sarthi used to come home, the daughter would scan through if anywhere Swami has mentioned anything about giving up non-vegetarian food, she would cut it out, keep that clipping and point to her mother and say, see mother, Swami is saying this. How can you not do this? Adding on to the burden of her mother's conscience. So this was the time when she decided, she said, Swami, you tell, though you say these things publicly, privately you tell different things to different people. I want to know whether this holds good even for me. You know, if something is very dear to us, before giving it up, though we know that Swami has told to give it up, we want to know whether when Swami said that, did he mean to me also? You know, so that is what was in running in her mind. And she said, Swami, if you really want me to give up eating meat, let that fish in the pond come towards me. A strange request, but that was what just came out unconsciously. The instant her thought was complete, she says, the fish turned and began to swim towards her. It came towards her till the edge of the pond, before again turning and swimming back. Instantly her mind, you know, said, you know, that was just sheer coincidence. It just was swimming with the current, so it happened to come near me. Right? Isn't that Swami? The minute she completed that thought saying Swami, she says that the fish took a sudden U-turn back towards her and came swimming back to the edge of the pond. And this time, at the edge of the pond, it didn't swim back. It stayed there. And she says, it was looking at me in the eye. She was just, she didn't know what to say. And the next thought that came in her head was, oh my God, this is real. Oh my God, this is real. And the minute that thought came in her head, the fish again turned and swam back. And you know, she says that that convinced her that she should give up meat. And again, you know, like as you said, the most amazing or most surprising or most thrilling part of this is that the minute that happened, she says she was able to effortlessly kick away a habit that had been hers for the last 40 years. And Miss Jeru Captain, from that day onwards, never again touched meat in her life. Now, this, I was reminded of the story because, you know, Swami is saying, give up this instant. If we say that, Swami, easy for you to say, you have no idea how tough it is. It's like telling a smoker, give up smoking this instant. Easy for you to say, I know it's good for me, whatever. I trust you. But Swami, you have no idea how tough it is. Miss Jeru Captain's story only goes on to show that if there is a will, if you decide to surrender to Swami, it can happen really in an instant. In an instant, just as Swami said in the discourse.
Very true. In fact, that's what I was saying, you know, when we scouted around the studio asking boys how they gave up.
Our own colleagues.
You know, our own colleagues. I mean, most of them were saying like, it's just that one day I desired it and I just gave up. I mean, I came to Swami and I just gave it up.
And our system admin, for example, he was saying that just like, you know, I was reminded of him because he too was influenced when he saw a butcher shop, when he saw the animals being butchered at the butcher shop. Mm-hmm. Just like daughter of Mrs. Jeru Captain, she saw a program on television that moved her. When he saw this happening in the butcher shop, he decided to give up, and him also it was instantaneous. And this was a time when he was not a Swami student or into Swami's college or anything like that. Which means there is some divine force. It need not be that you have to know Swami in order to get that strength to give it up in an instant. There is a divine force that is going to support you the minute you are inspired and motivated.
Right. That is about, you know, having Swami has the strength and as the source of inspiration to give it up. But you know, the other day I just happened to listen to a talk, and he is a person who is an environmentalist from the US.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he is the founder of the tree hugger movement, where they go around trying to stop deforestation, trying to stop the environment from having, we spoke about the environment becoming extinct because of man's action, you know, in the discussion we had about ceiling on desires. So he was talking that here we are talking about the environmental being protected, but he said, I was a happy non-vegetarian. And because he felt that was not conflicting with his idea of saving the greenery of the environment.
Okay.
But that is when he actually went through a short research of what it takes to have his meat on his plate. He realized what an environmental impact it is having.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that was actually shocking for him. And this is one aspect of non-vegetarianism which people do not actually come to know.
Exactly.
What impact it has on the environment and on the ecosystem.
There was the other program that we were listening that day. You know, in that they say how America today when it consumes meat, how actually this started off as a local region-based and resource-based practice, but today, thanks to transportation and globalization, it has become into some of the unhealthy habits. For example, the corn that is grown in the world, a greater percentage of corn goes to feed cattle and livestock which are going to be butchered for meat rather than actually feed the people. And you know, so huge are these corn fields that in order to have land to grow these corn and grow these other items which the cattle are going to consume, large areas of forest lands have been cleared illegally also in some cases. And this is one direct impact on the environment, large-scale deforestation. Well, you know, now somebody may question, what about clearing land areas for agricultural crops? You're clearing it there also. I know I'm jumping the gun and going ahead to another kind of factor, but I can't help it. You know, that's what happened. There is this Lindemann's 10% law. I'm sure you've heard about it, right, Prem?
Right, right. We've studied in school, right? 10%
yes.
Food chain.
Yeah, in food chain, anybody who has crossed 9th grade would have studied it in biology. Lindemann's 10% law says that the plants, which are the primary food manufacturers in the world, because they are able to trap an energy source which nobody else can, that is sunlight. They are able to convert only 1% of all the sunlight that they take in into food.
Right.
That is what Lindemann says. After that, he says, of the sunlight energy that the plants capture, they are able to store up in their body only 10% of it, which is available to the herbivores as food.
Right.
So a cabbage plant has stored only 10% of its absorbed solar energy into the cabbages, which can be consumed as food. The law further states that there is this 10% alone that can be transferred. Now, when a herbivore, say a deer, eats a plant, of all the food that it has received, only 10% of it gets stored in its muscles and in its biomass available as food, say for the hyena or for the tiger, which is next in the food chain. So with every single participant or extra link in the food chain, there is a 90% loss that takes place. Now what this means is, if we consume vegetarian food directly, that is if we grow crops and consume them directly, vis-a-vis consume animals which have been fed on these crops, we will be able to save 90%. 90% savings are generated because 100 kgs of food grains give 100 kg of food. But if fed to the chicken, 100 kg of food grains result only in 10 kg of chicken. That is what Lindemann's laws say, and it is scientifically proved. You just have to Google it and see. So you see, for those who say that deforestation takes place with agriculture also, this shows that deforestation takes place at 90% greater rate when it's crops that are being grown only to feed animals, which are going to be in turn eaten by men.
Now, even when you were talking about that food chain, I'm reminded of a light-hearted thing which one of my father's friends once shared with me. He was traveling, he was in a foreign country, where he was trying to tell the local there that please make sure that you give me vegetarian food because I'm a vegetarian. And that man said, even I'm a vegetarian. I eat only vegetarians, he said. He said, the animal eats the vegetable, I eat the animal. But you know, going back to that aspect of deforestation, see, what happens is, if you look at the environmental cycle, the livestock was meant to eat grass and fresh, you know, fresh green fields. That grass is not directly edible by the other animals in the cycle. In fact, even man. Because, you know, you talk of, when you talk of the cow being able to eat grass, you need some special enzymes actually to
break down
the cellulose.
A cow has four stomachs.
Right.
The rumen, reticulum, omasum, abomasum.
Right.
And in that, two of the stomachs are nothing but fermentation chambers where microbes act on these grasses.
Right.
And
because they are
them.
Supposed to have very, very strong celluloids in their, you know, in their leaves. So that to help them reduce the moisture leaving the plant and all those things. So actually some of these other animals which are omnivores in the cycle and even man do not have the ability to digest those cell components completely. So they were actually, you know, these animals, livestock are supposed to eat that. But what we are doing it, we are replacing that with corn and other things which actually other animals can eat directly. So we are actually replacing what is the natural food for livestock by cultivating some of these things. So there is another thing about the soil's nutrients being depleted because you are removing what was the naturally growing plant there and putting vegetation which is not natural to that ecosystem.
And why we are doing it? Because corn will fatten the cow faster than grass. And we want quick meat. So that is the, so you see, as you said, it is another environmental factor apart from, you know, loss, apart from deforestation, is the degradation of the soil. You know, these are all linked. It's such a nuclear reaction that one leads to the other. Because of that, nutrients are getting depleted, as you said, rightly from the soil. Now, what do we do for that? Add fertilizers. Now, fertilizers carry their own problem. Because, you know, fertilizers have to be delivered to the soil as chemicals which have, you know, in chemistry we study a cationic part and an anionic part, a positive part and a negative part, which form the compound actually. So what happens is, out of these two parts, only one part acts as a nutrient. The other part
is just a carrier.
Is just a carrier. What happens to all these carriers? These carriers are washed by the water into the lakes, ponds, rivers, everything.
It's a process called leaching, they call it, right?
Exactly.
Where it goes into the ground level water.
Ground level water. But now, yes, that is one thing. That is, it pollutes the groundwater. That is one, as you said. The other thing I'm talking about is these chemicals sometimes, you know, there's no way to ascertain the exact amount. You know, it's not that you spoon feed a plant. You just dump in tons or kilograms or tons of these fertilizers. Sometimes the fertilizers themselves don't get used. They remain there. And the whole fertilizers are washed into lakes and ponds. Now, when this happens, because there's an excess of nutrition, there is an algal bloom. Algal bloom meaning algae grow in such numbers, and thousands of lakes in the world have suffered from this. This is called eutrophication.
Right. It uses up all the oxygen which is dissolved in the water.
Apart from forming a thick layer on the surface.
Right.
Because of which all the aquatic life dies. And when all the aquatic life dies, after a while, because the plant also requires, you know, the plant actually is nourished. It's kept in check and balance because there is the dead remains of aquatic animals. There's also the excrement of aquatic animals, which acts as nutrients for these plants. Now there is a new supply of nutrition, which is man-made. So therefore, the plants do not depend on these aquatic life and just kill them out unconsciously. Once they are killed, this growth goes on and on, after which suddenly there is not enough nutrition to sustain. And once the algal bloom is either cleared or the algal bloom is gone, one ecosystem is dead. It is just as good as a trough of water in our home. It's no longer a pond, it's no longer a lake. It's just a pit with water. That's what happens. So this is another serious environmental impact that comes about. So first one we discussed is deforestation. Second one is because of deforestation, excess of loss of nutrition from the soil. And third one which comes from that is destruction of ecosystems. Three environmental hazards.
And the other thing which happens is, like, when we talk about fertilization and we talk of pesticides.
Fertilizers, I mean, not fertilizers.
Sorry, yeah, fertilizers and pesticides. You know, these are used even in food which man directly consumes, the plant and other things.
Hmm.
But another scientific thing which happens when you actually do it for fodder, which is for feed for livestock, what happens is there is something called biomagnification which happens. Because these are chemicals which will be consumed by these animals, right? And they retain some of these chemicals to an extent. And when man consumes this, actually there's something called biomagnification which happens, because the concentration of these chemicals actually increase as you go upper, you know, higher up in the food chain.
Exactly. See, putting it very simply, let us say there is 1 microgram of chemical in 1 kilogram of rice. Let's say, okay. Now, this chemical is something that cannot be broken down by the animal body or the human body.
Right.
It remains as it is. Now, when I consume 1 kilogram of rice, I'm getting 1 mic, you know, these figures are just, I'm quoting it off.
Okay.
But
just
to give the idea. So, when I consume 1 kilogram of rice, I'm having 1 microgram of a chemical pesticide that is in my body, which I can do nothing about. Nor can I excrete it, nor can I break it down. That's why it concentrates into my body. Now what happens, imagine, instead of 1 kg rice, if I eat 1 kg of chicken, say. Now this chicken has been fed on rice. Rice which has come again the same way. Now according to Lindemann's law that we saw, in order to get 1 kilogram of chicken, it must be fed at least 10 kilograms of rice, because 10% is the maximum efficiency that we saw. So now, that chicken has consumed 10 kgs of rice, meaning it has 10 micrograms of the chemical in its body. Now when I eat 1 kg of rice, 1 kg of chicken instead of 1 kg of rice, instead of 1 microgram of chemical, I am getting 10 micrograms of the chemical. And that is what is called as biomagnification, which basically means that as you go higher up in the food chain, the concentration of chemicals and pesticides in the body increases. So therefore, in 10 days, if I eat, say in 30 days, if I eat 10 kgs of rice, I'm having 10 micrograms. Instead of that, if I eat 10 kgs of meat, I'm having 100 micrograms. 10 times more susceptible to chemicals, which makes me 10 times more susceptible to cancers, to heart diseases, to kidney trouble, oh, whatnot.
But of course, that is the section we're going to come in detail later.
The health section.
In fact, Swami also has a lot to say on that. But before we come to that, as we are still in the environmental aspect of the thing, You know, one of the reasons why non-vegetarian consumption went up, you know, in the mid-50s and 60s was the increase in the refrigeration capacity of, you know, some of these production houses. Because now you could store meat, now you could transport meat.
Mm.
And that actually adds to the environmental concern now, because you are having to put in more energy in protecting that 1 kilogram or 100 tons or whatever is that quantity of meat, which actually, if it was that much of plant food, you would have saved so much in the refrigeration process itself.
Yes, so from environmental, we move on to the socio-economic factors. You know, the without doubt, a non-vegetarian way of life is more harmful to the environment than a vegetarian way of life. Of course, you know, there are exceptions. For example, the Eskimos in Iceland, where you get nothing but only, you know, where you have to subsist on meat. But dear listeners, in this we are again going into the general discussion. It is not highly specific. You know, we know, for example, that some chemicals are harmful. Nobody will tell that you eat those chemicals. But in medication, those very chemicals, for example, in cancer therapy, those very chemicals which are harmful to the human body are used. But using that as an argument to say that therefore all of us must consume that chemical is stupid to say the least. I mean, doesn't make sense, because those are exceptional cases. So again, we are not discussing the exceptions here. We are talking of the general case. And so we saw how the environment gets affected. In fact, one more important aspect before we move on to socio-economic frame, one more environmental aspect that has happened is, you know, in some places there are natural foragers.
Mm-hmm.
Animals that are specific for that region.
Okay.
Okay, and man, in order to satisfy his senses, his gratification that he gets by eating meat, he imports animals and starts growing them there. These domestic animals are, you know, many times attacked by the local inhabitant animals, or they are at competition, at loggerheads.
Okay.
Now man backs the domestic animals because he wants them. He protects his livestock. You know, in regions, for example, where elephants are there, you know, it has happened in India in many places where there's this conflict between man and elephant. Because man is foraging more and more of the forests for the sake of his livestock. Forest cover is going, so the elephants have to come out, but elephants are of no use to man directly, the wild elephants. So what does man do? Hunts down the elephant, kills the elephant, puts electrical fences and electrocutes them while protecting his cattle and animals which are, you know, useful for him financially and every other sense. Because of this, there have been many cases where local species of wildlife have been wiped out or nearly wiped out, because the total number of animals in the region are same, but the proportion of them which are wildlife vis-a-vis proportion of them which are domesticated are so skewed. And the wildlife is the thing that is suffering. Another important ecological disaster.
And just reiterating that, you know, again, the argument will be that we do that even for our food. We do that even when we want to expand our, you know, paddy fields or whatever. But again, reiterating that point that, you know,
10% law.
Yeah, 10% law. Because if you have 1 acre of paddy field, it can, let's say, directly feed X number of men and women. But if you're going to have in between livestock, then the number of men and women fed
come down
will come by 10%.
Will come down to 10%. Will come down
come
by
down,
90%.
Right, by 90%, come down to 10%. So where you could feed, let's say, 100 men and women, you're going to be feeding only 10 of them. So that much of space loss for feeding that many less people.
Exactly. So even if you see that as evil, this is the lesser of the two evils.
And the other environmental concern which I was very surprised to see was that of emission. You know, what is the amount of emission which happens because of processing of some of these, you know, meat-based products? Now they have discovered that it's about 15%, it contributes 15% to the greenhouse gases, which means all transportation put together does not give you as much emission as food production from the meat industry does.
Talking of emission, you know, this is the meat industries, right? Now let's talk about the animal emission directly.
Exactly. I think this is includes that also.
Yes. You know, the dung and the fecal matter of the animals, this is another concern, because they are predominantly fermented in the stomach of the herbivores. And the herbivores have always been kept in a check naturally by the carnivores. Now here is man artificially protecting herbivores and in fact breeding them, growing them in dozens and hundreds and thousands. In fact, in some places, for every human head, there is about 2,000 to 3,000 cattle head. You know, that is the state. That is the condition. Now, this fecal matter contains a lot of methane, which is nothing but a very important greenhouse gas.
Right.
On one side, they speak about, you know, the dangers of methane. Methane is highly inflammable. There have been several accidents. So many accidents in the meat industry because of the volatile nature of the gases that are emitted. And this also, as you said, adds to global warming, and global warming is a total issue in itself, you know. So, a vegetarian way of life, if the whole world were to turn vegetarian today, 15% of the global warming concerns will come down. That is an impressive statistic.
In fact, you know, the extent to which we go to protect our ability to gratify our senses is that there was a news article, I think 3 or 4 years back, where they found some medication for cows where they will reduce the amount of gas they will let out of the atmosphere, which will help in reducing global warming. You know, instead of giving up or reducing your intake of meat, we are trying to go all around the way.
Hamper the cow.
Yeah, and increase the amount of chemical content in the meat in the process.
Wow. You know what, Prem? Although it is the truth, it is actually a kind of a bitter truth that is so ghastly. I think before we go on to the socio-economic causes, this is a good point to give our listeners a break. Something beautiful, some nice music which is soul uplifting, so beautiful, as a good break from this. But dear listeners, as we stated before, we have no doubts as to what Swami says on the matter of vegetarian versus non-vegetarianism. Our effort here is only to go into the different factors, environmental, socio-economic, health factors, value-based factors, all the different possible factors which can try to explain why Swami is 100% towards vegetarianism and 100% against non-vegetarianism. So we'll be back after this little break. Enjoy this break, enjoy this song. After that, we'll come up with some more reasons which are sure convincing.
ఈశ్వర శ్యామ పరితిపురీశ్వర శ్యామ బన్సీ బజాఓ మన మందిర మే బన్సీ ధర ఘన శ్యామ హే మురళి మనోహర శ్యామ సుర సంగీత సజానే వాలా బన్సీధర ఘన శ్యామ పరితిపురీశ్వర శ్యామ పరితిపురీశ్వర శ్యామ బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ శ్యామ
శ్యామ
బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ శ్యామ
శ్యామ
బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 బోలో శ్యామ 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 సాయి శ్యామ 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 బన్సీ బజా మన మందిర మే
వెల్ దట్ వాజ్ అ సాంగ్ ఫ్రమ్ సాయి బ్లాసమ్స్ లేటెస్ట్ అప్ కమింగ్ ఆల్బమ్ భావాంజలి 9 ఇస్ అ బ్యూటిఫుల్ నంబర్ అండ్ సో ఇస్ ది ఆల్బమ్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ యాజ్ ఆల్వేస్ మ్యూజికల్ మెడిటేషన్ సెరీన్ లవ్లీ టు పుట్ ఇన్ యువర్ కార్ పుట్ అట్ హోమ్ ఎనీ టైమ్ అండ్ దిస్ విల్ బి అవుట్ ఇన్ అబౌట్ అ మంత్స్ టైమ్ ఐ థింక్ సో టు లిసనర్స్ ఎనీ వన్ ఆఫ్ యూ వాంటింగ్ ఇట్ క్యాన్ పిక్ ఇట్ అప్ భావాంజలి 9 definitely a value addition to your music collection.
Talking about all these environmental reasons why one is good to become a vegetarian, I was talking to our own Karuna Didi and I was asking her about her views about vegetarianism. Mm. You know, she's been an SSC teacher in Canada where she said she had the difficult job of trying to convince children there who have been brought up with that kind of food, and you have all your burgers and all the kind of Western food which is completely based on meat. So to get them to quit non-vegetarian food or meat eating was a very, very difficult thing. And she was sharing that one little thing what she did in one of the SSC classes. She said, see, I don't know anything because I have given up eating meat because Swami doesn't like it. Mm. So I have never gone into the details of why you should become vegetarian, the benefits for you and for the society. So you all are people who are very tech savvy and you know the computer and the internet so well. Why don't you go and research what the meat industry is doing to our environment?
Hmm.
Okay. And at the end of a few weeks, they came with a presentation which was as gory as the last half an hour we spent here trying to talk about it. But you know, it was enough for convincing them, because they were so disturbed by what they found that most of them after that presentation actually became vegetarians.
Wow.
So I think it's...
There's nothing like first-hand experience.
Right, there's nothing like you finding for yourself and you feeling guilty and you trying to change your ways. Then, you know, we sitting and telling that, you know, you should do this and you should do that. You are causing so much harm to the environment. How dare you? Instead of that, each one looks for themselves and see what they're doing and wanting to correct it.
You know, after the environmental reasons, we said there are so many socio-economic reasons. Of course, what was an environmental reason also becomes a socio-economic reason, because Lindemann's 10% law. I'm bringing it up again because when currently, you know, one of the greatest problems that we are facing as planet Earth is where on Earth, literally where on Earth are we going to grow food for the growing population? In such a scenario, it is almost a crime to eat meat, it looks like, because 90% is going waste by the same Lindemann's 10% law that we got acquainted with. So that is one thing, means to feed the thing. Lindemann's law even is a socio-economic concern as well. You know, for instance, they have found out in a study done in United Kingdom that when an acre of land is used to grow food, vis-a-vis when an acre of land is used to feed livestock, which are then slaughtered for food as meat. If you do these two comparisons, we were till now, you know, basing on Lindemann's 10% law. Theoretically, we were stating that it's about 90% savings. But if we see that study that was done by a UK group, research group, it is very shocking. They found out that when, these are taking the extreme cases, in extreme cases, with the best possible everything provided, that is why I say extreme case, means an average, this will not happen. A land will not be able to yield that much. But if we do the best possible thing for 1 acre of land, here are the statistics. 1 acre of land can yield per year 450,000 pounds of food grains. 450,000 pounds.
Okay.
The same thing if done for animals, I mean, is grown for feeding animals which are then slaughtered for food, the same 1 acre of land will yield only 1,000 pounds of meat. Where is 1,000 pounds of meat? Where is 450,000 pounds of food grains? So we were till now thinking it's 90%. It is you know, 10 times more that we can feed if it is vegetarian. This study shows that it is not 10 times, but 450 times.
450% fall.
450 times more. Yes. So you see, that means what a great socio-economic factor this is in order to go vegetarian.
Right. And I think what happens is, you know, typically what is happening in countries like ours, you know, in Indian developing countries, is that some of these, you know, global houses like fast food restaurants and fast food chains are seeing the developing countries as a very, very viable market for them. So they are actually selling their kind of food, which actually was not economically right for our kind of eating also. In fact, when Mahatma Gandhi goes and speaks in London, he says most of Indians are vegetarian because of their situation, the economical situation.
They can't afford, yes.
Right. But now you're being flooded with some things which actually you don't need. There is no new, I mean, the idea that food is for sustenance is gone. The idea of you eat to live is changing. You live to eat.
Yes, food has become an entertainment. Food has become a passion. And in that is gone compassion. You know, I was talking to our one of our office boys the other day. He was telling a very strange kind of, not strange actually, it is not strange anymore. But at that time I really was taken aback. So, you know, he, of course, he is not earning much. And every now and then we feel like helping him out by, you know, giving him a few bonuses here and there in cash and kind or whatever, little what we can do to help him. And so I know that he has got his wife, he has got his child, his parents, he's taking care of his parents, which is very noble. I have visited his house in the village. It's a tiny house, but they're managing pretty well. Now, he says that 4 times a week, they cook meat at his home. Okay, that is because his father is not able to give up. He swears, he says, sir, I don't eat meat. And I believe him. And he says, but I can't stop my father and mother, you know, they have to have it and they have to eat it. So I said, okay. So I asked him, how much does he pay for 1 kilogram of meat? Because he says that on an average per day, they consume about 1 kilogram of wheat, of meat. 1 kilogram of meat costs 250 rupees. And 1 kilogram of wheat costs about 50 to 60 rupees. It's 5 times more costly. Directly you can see the the economic impact. Buying meat is almost 5 times costlier than buying other foods. And yet, this family which is actually, you know, which can do much better by just every 1,000 rupees matters so much for their family. Here they are spending 5 times the amount on meat, though it is not a necessity because there is no shortage of food grains or anything. It's just because he says his father is not able to give up. In fact, the other day, you know, I met one more, he's a finance consultant, you know.
Okay.
Faiz Mohammed, I think he's off and on our radio also.
Right.
Regularly, he's from the West Indies, Trinidad, and he does a lot of seva there. He was saying that one of the most important techniques he uses in order to help his clients save up. You know, many of come and say that we would like to have this, but we can't save up, help with the financial plan.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you won't believe how many people I've advised to give up tobacco or give up meat and use the savings generated from that to make good investment which will stand in good stead for you in the future. Just imagine, my investment is giving up meat. That is another angle that we don't think in our day-to-day life. Not eating meat and going vegetarian can be a very, very sound and good financial investment. For example, if we take this boy's family, it results to almost something like 200 into 4. That's about 800 rupees a week, which is about 3,500 rupees a month. He's almost going to save two-thirds or half to two-thirds of his salary by just giving up non-vegetarian. See, it makes so much economic sense also.
And it's also because of the amount of resources which go into that. You know, we've spoken of that before.
Mm.
Let us say you're going to make a big purchase. You will always look at, you know, going and buying it from the source. You know, there's somebody who is a wholesaler, somebody who is a person who is, you know, let's say, in those days when they used to perform marriages, when you have to procure large amounts of raw material, you'll go to a person who is the first source, right?
Correct.
I mean, you wouldn't go to somebody who's going to be the middleman who buys it from somebody who buys it from somebody who buys it from the farm. You would try to go to the source.
Correct.
And buy. And similarly, that's what, instead of having a plate of meal which is going to come straight, a meal which is going to come from a straight source, which is plant and grains, you are going to the third or fourth source. You know, somebody consumes that and somebody, so much of manufacturing and so many input
stages
go into it.
Mm.
And then finally, obviously the one which you're having finally is so processed that it has to be so much more expensive.
You know, this is another study that was done in India. The LPG gas that is used for cooking in a vegetarian home versus a non-vegetarian home, almost 3 times more in a non-vegetarian home, because that much of gas you need to cook the meat. So there is another wastage. If you see it that way, it's like a wastage.
Exactly.
You can save. Only 1/3 of the energy that is needed to cook vegetarian food. And you know, there are so many varieties of vegetarian food which you need not cook.
In fact, you know, that's exactly what one of our colleagues were sharing with us.
Hmm.
Because he said, see, meat as such is tasteless. And if you want to add taste to it, there's so much energy input which goes into it and so much of other ingredients which have to go to it before you make that palatable.
Mm.
And he says the difference between a vegetarian and non-vegetarian house is that you actually cut down on so many other things. It's not just the expense of buying non-vegetarian food, but the other ingredients which go into making of that meal is also saved when you actually eat vegetarian food.
Talking of domestic savings, another savings that unconsciously happen is the amount of water used, you know, whether it's fish or anything, amount of water used to clean it, not only before cooking, after it is consumed, because you know, invariably oil is used extensively while cooking meat, and that has to happen. And when that is done, to wash the vessels, more amount of water is used, more amount of detergent, soap is used. There are so much, you know, so much ceiling on desires that we can practice by just going vegetarian.
In fact, there is a scientific study which says that for every 1 pound of meat, the amount of water used is 100 times what is used for 1 pound of vegetable or let's say potato or any grain.
Wow.
You know, using 100 times water. You know, we speak so much about water conservation. We talk about being responsible.
We talk about shutting taps and stopping those drops.
Right. I mean, that is exactly what was an eye-opener for me, because by being vegetarian, you're being so friendly to the environment. Forget the compassionate part. Forget the part that you're not letting animals suffer. But you're directly actually benefiting the society. And when we spoke about ceiling on desires, that's exactly what we said, that there are so many small things which we can do which will actually make a big impact to the ecosystem we are living in. And in fact, being vegetarian actually is such a vital thing in that.
Adding on further, you know, we spoke about how it saves money and how it saves energy, that is the gas. One more, even time. Even time, you know, the time needed to cook a non-vegetarian, you can test it out practically, you know, go to some hotel and order an exotic vegetarian dish and order an exotic non-vegetarian dish. See the time needed to make both. There is more time consumed in preparing. You know, the problem is in a hotel, things are kept ready. You know, just the mixing is done and the dish is prepared. But if you happen, I mean, if you're a vegetarian, and if you want to experience that, visit a non-vegetarian home and see how long it takes. Forget the energy and money part, the time needed in order to cook a non-vegetarian dish. On the other hand, in the as I said before, there is no equivalent in a non-vegetarian side where I can directly eat. I can just pluck an apple from the tree, just wash it so that the pesticide, actually it doesn't need washing also. It is man who has made washing mandatory because of the pesticides that he sprays. But otherwise, apples, mangoes, you know, they were meant to be plucked off the tree and eaten. So many vegetables are eaten raw. Cabbage, carrot, cucumber, onions, tomatoes, they're all eaten raw. Directly you can eat from the plant. There's nothing like that which can be directly eaten. It needs a lot of processing when it comes to meat. So a lot of time savings apart from energy and money savings also happen when you're vegetarian.
And you know, talking about environment, another figure which I came across which was really shocking is, there is this person who's talking about how the fast food industry has taken over our food completely. It's literally conquered and taken it away from us. You know, he says, by a figure which is released by the U.S. Food Control Board or whatever
FDA,
they call it.
I think FDA.
You know, that claims that in a year, this was a statistic of the year 2008, only in 2008, 10 billion, you know, billion livestock were used only to feed U.S.
10 billion.
And just to put it in perspective, the population of India, which is the second populous country in the world, is 1.2 billion.
My God.
Imagine, it's more than the population of the entire earth. I think the population of the earth is 7 or 8 billion. So only one country consumes 10 billion life forms.
Oh my God. And to add on to that, they have specialities like the frog leg or this part, where only a part of the animal
is
eaten.
This is waste. Only cow, you know, the goat, the pig and the poultry.
Livestock, yes.
It doesn't include all the
exotic
other things.
Dishes.
Exotic dishes. I mean, imagine talking about environment, that much of the ecosystem is actually being consumed by one species.
No, not by one species. By one species in one country.
In one country, exactly. Sorry. Thanks for correcting me. Exactly. One country is able to consume this. I mean, this is not to show the United States in poor light, because this was some responsible organization which came up with these figures.
I don't think such studies have been done in other countries.
Right, other
that
countries
is why we are thankful to the United States for this study.
And this can actually be extrapolated, and you can imagine what the world as such is consuming. And in fact, another study which shows, compared to 1950 and 2010, our meat consumption has doubled. Which means not only is that there is a consistent, you know, those who are non-vegetarians are remaining non-vegetarians, but the consumption of meat is increasing. It has doubled, and they believe that another 10, 20 years it's going to double once again.
Hmm. And you know, of course, to complete this, argument for these socio-economic causes, reasons, there's of course the time that is needed, the costs that are involved in freezing and transportation of meat, which is not so for the vegetables. You know, many times it happens that vegetables can be grown anywhere, and usually the local produce is used, and they are transported and consumed. But in meat, the extensive freezing and transportation costs that require, and sometimes the meat goes bad, so therefore the live animal has to be transported, and oh my god, that opens another horror box, another Pandora's box of horror, which we shall reserve for a future topic. So with that, we come somewhat to a close of the socio-economic factors after the environmental factors. Finally, you know, we come to a very, very important factor. Don't know if we'll be able to complete it today, dear listeners, but this is the health factors.
Because this is one of the arguments which is often given by those who are for meat eating. Because they say, what about the nutrients? You know, what about the benefits of eating meat and eating non-vegetarian food, animal products?
I think, Prem, before we speak about it, we should allow Swami to speak on that.
Exactly, because definitely Swami does not subscribe to the idea that what you get in meat, you don't find in vegetarian food. Because he is the maker, he knows the rules better than all of us, and he knows what he's talking about. And here is Swami saying, we're just going to play a small clip where Swami is talking about a lot of things, where he also says that all that you need, oh man, I've given it in plants and you don't have to go and seek it in animal
food. The maker is saying it.
Exactly, the maker of this whole thing. So, for us, this is the last word, but we'll begin with this and we'll see why, even if you talk about health, being a vegetarian is definitely a better option.
జగత్తునందు పుట్టినటువంటి 84 లక్షల జీవరాశుల లోపల కూడాను అమంగ్ 84 లక్షల్ ఆఫ్ లివింగ్ బీయింగ్స్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ విచ్ 93,99,999 తమ యొక్క సహజాహారాన్ని తాను అనుభవిస్తున్నాయి. 83,99,999 ఆర్ బౌండ్ బై దేర్ ఓన్ మీట్. పశుపక్షి మృగాదులంత భగవంతుడు అందించేటువంటి సహజాహారాన్ని అందుకుంటున్నాయి. All these beasts, birds, etc. take the food which is given by God. Therefore, they are not suffering any type of diseases.
కానీ మానవుని యొక్క జిహ్వచాపల్యం చేతనే వీడు అనేక రకమైనటువంటి రుచులకు మరిగి దీనిని కల్పితమైనటువంటి పక్వాలుగా మార్చుకుంటూ వస్తున్నాడు.
Swayed by the taste of the tongue, man is trying to change the natural food into various types of delicious food.
నా టేస్ట్ నిమిత్తమే కుర్మాలు బర్మాలు అన్ని చేసుకోవాలి.
ఫర్ సాటిస్ఫైయింగ్ యువర్ ఓన్ టేస్ట్ యూ హావ్ టు ప్రిపేర్ డిఫరెంట్ టైప్స్.
కానీ వాని ఆయు ప్రమాణం ఎంత బర్న్ అయిపోతుందో వాడు యోచన చేసుకోవటం లేదు.
బట్ హీఈస్ నాట్ బాదర్ టు థింక్ అబౌట్ ది లాంగ్విటీ అండ్ హౌ లాంగ్ హీఈస్ గోయింగ్ టు లివ్.
ఇందులో కూడాను మన ఆహార నిమిత్తమైన దీంట్లోపల కూడాను
ఈవెన్ విత్ రెఫరెన్స్ టు ఫుడ్
కూరగాయలు ఆహారం తినేటువంటి వారికి తక్కువ జబ్బులుగా వస్తున్నాయి.
పీపుల్ హూ టేక్ మోర్ వెజిటబుల్స్ ఆర్ సబ్జెక్టెడ్ టు లెస్ ఆఫ్ డిసీజెస్.
ఇది కూరగాయలు లేకుండా మాంసాహారం చేసేటువంటి వారికి ఎక్కువ జబ్బులు వస్తున్నాయి.
ద నాన్ వెజిటేరియన్స్ గెట్ మోర్ డిసీజెస్.
కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ ది రీజన్?
ఆ యొక్క మానవునికి సమన్వయమైనటువంటి ఆహారమే వానికి సరియైన బ్యాలెన్స్ ఇస్తుంటారు.
దిస్ వెజిటేరియన్ ఫుడ్ అలోన్ గివ్స్ దట్ type of balanced food which is required by man.
It is human body, the animal body.
That is animal body from which
ee rendittigini sariyinattu yokka cherika kudaradu.
It is difficult to bring about a balance.
Edo doctors cheptuntaru protein anta deentlo untuntadi bhujinchandi pushtiga avutarani. Idi kevalamu vaari balahinatale.
Doctors, when they say that this mutton has
trage paallo pushti leda andulo protein leda perugulo protein leda kurgayallo protein leda bedallo protein leda protein ekkadaina untundali sadhyamainta varaku.
Protein is not merely available in mutton, it is available in every type of vegetable, in dal.
Idi kevalam sharirikamainatu anarogyame kaakunda manasika sambandhamaina anarogyanni kuda penchutunnayi.
It not merely brings about the diseases of the body, but even diseases of the mind are brought about by the
mind. Kanuka mana mind etta potundante food to head to God. Ee moodintiki sambandham
untundi. There is a lot of relationship between food, head and God.
ఈ అనిమల్ ఫుడ్ ను మనం భుజించడం చేత అనిమల్ థాట్స్ ఏ మనలో ప్రారంభమవుతున్నాయి.
వెన్ యూ పార్టేక్ అనిమల్ ఫుడ్ యు గెట్ అనిమల్ థాట్స్.
చూసారా, ఎట్టి ఆహారము అట్టి భావం.
యూ కెన్ సీ నేచురలీ ది టైప్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ డిసైడ్స్ ది టైప్ ఆఫ్ థాట్స్.
కనుక ఈనాడు మానవత్వానికి విరుద్ధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అమానుష్యత్వాన్ని అనుభవిస్తున్నారంటే ఎంత ఘోరమైనటువంటిది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అట్రాషియస్ దట్ మ్యాన్ ఈస్ సబ్జెక్టింగ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ to such kind of helpless
అడవుల్లో స్వేచ్ఛగా సంచరించేటువంటి మృగముల కంటే హీనమైపోతుంది అది మానవుని యొక్క మనస్సు.
మ్యాన్స్ మైండ్ ఈస్ బికమింగ్ వర్స్ దాన్ ది యానిమల్స్.
నిర్దాక్షిణ్యంగా, నిర్మోహంగా, అప్రీతిగా మానవత్వాన్ని హింసిస్తున్నారు.
Man is cruelly putting other people to suffering without
మానవునికి మానవునికి మధ్యనే సన్నిహిత సంబంధ బాంధవ్యం కోల్పోతుంది.
Man is losing the human approach towards other human beings in the very first
కారణము మన ఆహార దోషమే.
The reason is the type of food that
you విద్యార్థులారా, ఆహార విహారాన్ని సరైన దృష్టిలో మీరు ఉంచుకోవాలి.
Dear students, enjoy food and habits in proper way.
So that, dear listeners, is Swami very, very categorically saying, you know, there is no need for nutrients to go to meat, because whatever is required is placed in plants and, you know.
You know, the best thing was, Prem, that Swami is saying that, as you know, like the maker is saying, I have provided you with everything that you need. You need not resort to meat. And I feel, in a way, we had raised this point before. What about people, you know, in Iceland and places where it is not available at all? You know, even in such cases, if one is determined, one is able to manage. I was reminded of that incident you said about that.
Right. I think, you know, when I was in school, we were told, that was a time when there was a news. There was this South Indian man who actually went with an expedition to Antarctica.
Indian expedition
to Antarctica. And you know, when he was taken there, he was told that, you know, you'll have to drink some alcoholic drink, you'll have to eat non-vegetarian food, because these are things which give you warmth. That is the idea.
Needed for survival
in those conditions. He said, see, I've been a vegetarian, I've been a teetotaler all my life, so I'll try my best not to take all these things, and let me really test out whether you definitely need such things. But actually, he went there, lived there for 3 months, I think that's the expedition duration, and he came back, he didn't have to drink, he didn't have to eat any non-vegetarian food. So he said that, see, this is an idea which has been passed on to us and we've just believed it blindly. He said man is much more stronger than he thinks he is, and if you have the resolve and if you have really the commitment, you can actually live without any of these things.
And you can live healthy too, because as we discussed, biomagnification is a danger that stares in our face every day, all the more in the recent times, because the use of pesticides, the use of fertilizers, use of chemicals in food production have almost become an integral part of food production, the use of all these things. There is no way you can avoid it. And so going vegetarian definitely reduces the chances of all these chemicals accumulating in our body by up to 90%. And let me tell you, I mean, this is known, in vegetarian food there is a concept called organic food, which is grown without chemicals. Do you have organic animals? I mean, do you have?
In fact, you know, Arvind, there is organic non-vegetarian food now.
Oh, okay.
You know how silly it is? Huh. They feed the livestock with organic food.
Oh, God.
it's like being a vegetarian by eating a vegetarian. You know, it's
I didn't know that. Okay, it's a pity that. But well, you know, when cornered, the mind will come up with all kinds of excuses. But fine, it's good then. So That means organic meat would be very, very costly then.
You can imagine, yeah, it definitely would be, and that much more resources will go into having organic meat.
So it's more wasteful and more expensive, which means if you're a normal middle income category.
Exactly, because you know,
category.
Talking about, we spoke about fertilizers. Fertilizers are used where a certain plot of land can give you more produce. So when you say organic, you're doing it without fertilizers, without pesticides. So the same produce has to come from larger tracts of land.
Correct.
So again, when you're talking about eating organic non-vegetarian food, you're actually consuming so much more resources.
Oh my God, I can only imagine that. But well, even let's say I'm going to eat only organic non-vegetarian food. But that apart, you know, there are so many other problems. For example, they say, again, this Swami was referring to that in the discourse. He was saying you get animal tendencies and animal feelings. On the face of it, it looks like some kind of spiritual statement, and if you do not believe, say, if you don't have full faith in Swami, you may say, what is this? It's just talking of the head. You eat animals, you get animal nature. Or it means, you know, I had heard one argument where somebody was saying, then if you eat plants, you get plant nature. I don't want to be so lazy, you know, just stuck in a place. I'd rather have an animal nature. That is a silly argument, because scientifically, if we see, you know, they say that not they say. It is known that all mammals, all animals have something called adrenaline. Adrenaline is called the flight or fight hormone.
Right.
This is a hormone that is released in the body in times of stress. It gives you the necessary courage, bravery. Many times when we see bravery, it is not bravery as such, it is adrenaline. You know, it gives you that adrenaline rush, as it's called. It makes you either stand up and fight against all odds, or it makes you take to flight, that is run away, escape. So the adrenaline is called as a flight or fight hormone. And invariably it gets released in every moment of stress. That's why you say that, you know, my adrenaline was pumping, my adrenaline was rising, all this. The same thing happens in animals also. And when they are being slaughtered, there is a surge of adrenaline, an adrenaline rush. The animal wants to fight, that also happens, you know. In fact, they have said there are many injuries that result in the meat industry because of the animal kicking out or biting or whatever, you know, because they are trying to fight. Why are they trying to fight? Because of adrenaline. Or they are trying to run away. That's also because of adrenaline. Now, this adrenaline, this chemical, is not fully metabolized in the body. It remains, the traces of it remains in the meat. So, adrenaline, which was meant to be generated by the endocrine gland in the human body, from the adrenal cortex, is now being given externally via meat. And therefore they say there are greater chances for anger, for violent aggression, if meat is consumed, because, you know, there are traces of adrenaline, which are not traces actually, there is quite a decent amount of adrenaline which is not completely broken down, which is present in meat.
And you know, again, talking about adrenaline, I might not be completely scientifically right. From what I understand, one of the processes which the adrenaline does is, you know, it actually outsources what the brain is supposed to do to your other limbs. You know, that's why when you actually are in danger, there's an adrenaline rush, you immediately react.
You react in an illogical manner.
Right. You instantaneously react. So it's more like a reflex action which is set off. Okay. And that is why they say when you are in fear, you lose your discriminatory power.
Hmm.
You know, when you are attacked.
Angry, when you are in fear.
So actually what the adrenaline does is it actually reduces your discrimination. And that is what when Swami says animal nature will come. The only difference Swami says between an animal and a man is an animal is programmed to be dharmic. I mean, it's not a choice it makes. It's programmed. So there is no discrimination in it. The leap in from animal to man is the ability to discriminate. And you are actually taking in that inability to discriminate in the form of food.
That's why the animal nature, that's
animal nature. And it's not actually a very, I mean, it's not, you cannot say it's an hogwash spiritual concept. It's actually a scientific, very logical concept here.
Along the same lines, you know, it's not only adrenaline that remains. Uric acid. Uric acid is there in animal muscles. Now, uric acid is one stage before urine. And you know, uric acid crystals are what forms kidney stones. There are stones in the ureter, urinary bladder. That's why the kidney filters it out. You know, filters it out. Filtration takes place from the blood and it is voided through urine. Now, animal muscles have a lot of this uric acid which is there in them. And that crystallizes in human joints now. So, a person taking meat has a greater chance of suffering from arthritis. That okay. is another medical problem, you know.
Right. In fact, one of the statistics which we came across was that the size of a kidney in a carnivorous animal is 5 times the size of that in a herbivorous one.
Exactly.
That itself shows that your kidney, the human kidney, is actually not equipped to handle non-vegetarian diet.
Not only the human kidney, Prem, even if we have a look at the human teeth, if we have a look at the human stomach, you know, in order to digest meat, you need a very, very acidic stomach. That's what the carnivores have. In fact, that is the reason why a hyena will eat a rotting flesh. Nothing will happen. You eat it, you will die within a day. You know, that kind of rotting and putrid flesh the hyena can eat because its stomach is so acidic. Okay, so the lion's stomach may not be as acidic as the hyena's, but it is terribly acidic compared to our stomachs. So a carnivorous, a meat-eating animal, a meat-eating person, there's nothing like a meat-eating person, a meat-eating animal is having a very, very acidic stomach, which we don't have. So not only the kidney, the stomach itself shows that you are not meant to eat meat. The teeth that we have, you know, there's something called a bite force. They measure, you know, an alligator, a lion, a bear, different animals have a bite force, the force with which they bite. And if you see the champion bite force animals in the world, all of them are carnivores. Carnivores have a great bite force because they hunt their food and they need that bite force to hold on to the neck of a deer or a gazelle and bring it down. Man was not meant to hunt that. Man was not meant to bring down animals. That is why his bite force, a man's bite force, is one of the least on planet Earth. A bite force which matches with those of the herbivores. So there are so many parts of the body which indicate directly that the human body is not meant to consume meat.
Yeah, absolutely, because you know that is why Swami very often says the statement, you should not be an akara manavudu. You should not be a man only in form. I mean, a form that is given to you itself gives you a certain indication of how you should lead your life.
Hmm.
And we are actually overlooking all those indications, those clues and those hints which God has given us in the form of this very human body. And we go, you know, in one hand we go on studying the human body in so much detail, but we are actually just overlooking all the hints that this is throwing up. And there will always be arguments which say that, you know, yeah, but there is this part of the human body which is actually meant to digest this, and this part, this aspect of the human digestive system which helps. So there will always be arguments like that. But to actually counter that, we'll have to go into other reasons why it is good to be vegetarians. But I think that's a very, very long topic. In fact, even the health hazards of being a non-vegetarian is not completely covered. But due to the lack of time, I think, Arvind, we'll have to come back next week and talk about it.
So, dear listeners, please bear with us if we can say so, because it is going to be as gory as this and we will be realizing so many problems. But, you know, this will validate so strongly why is Swami so strongly against non-vegetarianism. In fact, we recently concluded a first volume of Satyam Shivam Sundaram series. In the first few episodes of that, we spent quite some time discussing how Swami not only himself gave up, I mean, never consumed meat, he forced his family members to give up meat, he forced his friends to give up meat. So, as a child itself, Swami has strongly been vegetarian, 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 and that's what he has been. All through his life, that's what he has spoken. In fact, even if we take his life as his message has been that. But in this case, even what he has spoken has been that. There's no, without any exception, against meat and non-vegetarianism. There are several other scientific reasons and facts which we shall go into in the next week's satsang. Along with that, we shall also narrate 2-3 brilliant, beautiful examples, experiences of devotees who have actually given up non-vegetarianism with Swami's grace. And of course, we shall bring to you a few more discourse clips so that if in case you are on the wall deciding, you will definitely fall onto the side of vegetarianism.
And as Arvind said, Swami has ever been from his childhood converting people into this noble dietary regime of vegetarianism. So if amongst you anybody is there who has actually taken up this challenge and with your effort and Swami's blessing have taken up to vegetarianism, we would love to hear your story and share it with all our listeners in the next week.
You never know, it might be a life changer for somebody.
Absolutely.
It will be an inspiration for many, many more.
I mean, absolutely. There might be somebody who is saying that, Swami, if you tell me the story in this way, if somebody has had this experience in this way, then I will give up eating meat.
And so, that is definitely a viable idea, because if a person could feel, let that fish swim towards me, then I'll give up. Why not this?
Absolutely. So, dear listeners, we hope to come back next week, continuing this topic, which you can see how dear and how close to Swami's heart it was. Because when Swami said, if you want to give me a birthday gift, give me this, then you can understand how much Swami wants us to offer this to him.
And on Shivratri day, tomorrow Shivratri, we'll all be sitting for a whole night-long vigil of bhajans. That is the time when Swami says that you should give up all your sensual attractions and attachments and concentrate on God. If we can give this one thing up, I'm sure it will be a great, great gift for our dear Swami on Mahashivratri. With that, dear listeners, we offer this with all humility at Swami's lotus feet, and we leave you with this song, at the other side of which will be Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Sai Ra. Sakha Bhagavan. హృదయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థన మీకోసమే, హృదయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థన మీకోసమే. ప్రాణదీపమా దయతో దీవించుమా,
ప్రాణదీపమా దయతో దీవించుమా.
హృదయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థన జయ రామ సాయి రామ, జయ రామ జయ రామ జయ రామ.
దిల్ కే అంధియారో మే సాయి దీప తేరే హై,
దిల్ కే అంధియారో మే సాయి దీప తేరే హై.
बहारों के ये नगमे तेरे हैं,
आंधी में बहारों के नगमे तेरे हैं.
लौट आए देखो खोए पिछड़े तेरे द्वारे हैं,
लौट आए
देखो खोए पिछड़े तेरे द्वारे हैं. सफर साई तू ही है,
सुनी राहों में हम सफर साई तू ही है.
हृदय विरहमो मदिन प्रार्थना मी को सभी,
हृदय विरहमो मदिन प्रार्थना मी को सभी.
तेरा प्यार जीवन नाथा,
साई राम तेरा प्यार प्यार जीवन नाथा.
प्रेम धारा निकले दिल से है ये दिल की पुकार,
प्रेम धारा निकले दिल से
है ये दिल की पुकार.
चरणों में रख लो साई बाबा,
चरणों में रख लो साई बाबा.
हमको तुमसे है प्यार.